Welcome to our deep dive. I'll be your host today as we unpack a fascinating article from the Averaging Up collection.
And I'll be guiding you through the financial architecture of it all. It's great to be here.
So, you know, you read the financial headlines on any given morning, and the narrative is almost always identical.
Yeah, always the same.
Right. A corporation announces that its top-line revenue has doubled, or they're expanding their physical footprint, you know, hiring 10,000 new employees. Mm-hmm. And instinctively, the market just cheers.
Exactly. The stock price surges.
We're fundamentally wired to assume that corporate growth is inherently good. We assume a larger footprint automatically equates to a more valuable enterprise.
And that assumption is arguably the most pervasive blind spot in modern investing. I mean, we reflexively reward expansion without interrogating the cost of that expansion.
We really do.
The market treats growth as this universal virtue, completely ignoring the underlying physics of how value is actually formed.
But what if that growth is essentially a mirage? Under the wrong mathematical conditions, growth does not merely fail to add value. It actively destroys it from the inside out.
It does.
So today our mission is to rigorously examine an article detailing the June 2026 SpaceX IPO. We're going to use that specific event to unpack the mathematical framework of value creation provided by Aswath Damodaran,
the dean of valuation himself.
Right. The objective here is to give you, the listener, the tools to mathematically distinguish between growth that builds a lasting empire and growth that systematically leaks value.
And understanding this arithmetic is the ultimate shortcut to becoming a more sophisticated reader of business narratives. When you grasp the actual mechanics of value creation, you stop being swayed by top-line revenue hype.
Right. You start analyzing the structural integrity of the business model itself. So let's move past the theoretical shock of the statement that growth can be destructive and get straight into the mechanics of the spreadsheet.
Because on the surface, selling more products or reaching more users seems like an undeniable victory.
It does.
But it comes down to a fundamental reality that is almost always ignored during periods of market euphoria. Growth is never free.
Yeah.
To expand its operations, a company must constantly reinvest capital. They have to build manufacturing facilities, fund R&D, acquire competitors.
They're heavily subsidized customer acquisition to gain market share.
Exactly. The amount of cash a company must deploy is dictated by a strict mathematical relationship. The faster the desired growth rate and the lower the internal return on that deployed capital, the more cash must be continually poured back into the machine.
Just to sustain the target, the Averaging Up article highlights a very specific quote from Aswath Damodaran from June 2026 regarding this exact dynamic.
Oh, the quote about reinvestment.
Right. He stated, growth, when it's accompanied by huge amounts of reinvestment and substandard gross margins, might not just be neutral to value, but actually be value destructive.
Which is a heavy statement.
It is.
Yeah.
And we need to translate that academic phrasing into tangible reality for you listening. What does it actually mean for margins and reinvestment to destroy value?
Well, we have to define the arithmetic threshold. And the easiest way to understand this is to look at the cost of capital.
Okay.
Let's say a company raises funds, whether by taking on debt from a bank or issuing equity to shareholders. That money comes with an expectation. If the blended cost of that capital is, say, 8%, that is the hurdle rate.
Right. So if the company takes that money, builds a new factory, and the return on that invested capital is 12%, value is created.
Precisely. Every dollar poured into the machine comes back as more than a dollar. That's the scenario the market always assumes is taking place when revenues go up.
But if the return generated by that new factory merely equals the 8% cost of capital, the entire operation is completely neutral. The money is essentially moving in a circle.
It is. I mean, the company might be executing a massive amount of labor, expanding global operations, hiring thousands of people, but fundamentally, they are creating zero additional value for the enterprise.
And here's the destructive scenario. If the company takes that capital costing 8% and deploys it into a project that only yields a 4% return, value is actively destroyed.
Each dollar reinvested yields less than a dollar in return. In this state, growth acts purely as a multiplier. If your returns are negative relative to your capital costs, accelerating your growth rate does not save the business.
It simply causes the business to leak value at an exponentially faster rate. You can think of growth as pressing the accelerator in a vehicle.
That's a good analogy.
If the engine is tuned correctly, meaning returns exceed the cost of capital, pressing the gas generates forward momentum. you're compounding value.
Right.
But if there's a severe leak in your fuel line, meaning returns fall below costs, pressing the accelerator harder does not move you forward. It just rapidly empties your gas tank. The action of pressing the pedal is the same, but the mechanical outcome is entirely opposite depending on the condition of the engine.
Profitable, capital-efficient growth is the goal. Mere expansion is not. And testing this mathematical framework against a real-world high-stakes specimen is where this exercise becomes highly instructive.
Which is why the SpaceX Prospectus provides such an unparalleled laboratory to examine these concepts in practice, primarily because the company operates across dramatically different economic realities.
As the article details, SpaceX is not just one monolithic entity. It's constructed of three entirely distinct business architectures, all operating under one corporate umbrella.
Analyzing them side by side demonstrates exactly how the physics of value operate. First, you have Starlink, the satellite internet constellation. This segment serves as the engine of the entire company.
Right. It generates gross margins of approximately 60%, with revenue growth approaching 50%. We need to look at the mechanics of why Starlink achieves those margins.
Because it possesses a highly defensible moat and exceptionally strong unit economics.
Yeah, once the initial capital expenditure of launching a constellation of satellites is complete, the marginal cost of adding a new internet subscriber in a rural location is incredibly low.
They're essentially establishing a recurring toll on global connectivity. The returns on that deployed capital easily clear the arithmetic threshold.
It's a highly efficient value creator. Then you have the second architecture, the launch business.
The rockets themselves.
Yeah.
This is the foundational pillar of the company. It operates with gross margins around 45% and much slower growth, hovering near 8%.
But it has established a real tangible moat through the mastery of reusability.
Right.
Reusability is the key mechanical advantage there. While competitors are expending massive amounts of capital to build rockets that are discarded into the ocean after a single use, SpaceX lands the booster and flies it again.
The upfront research and development costs were astronomical, but the ongoing unit economics are now heavily tilted in their favor.
Exactly. It's a solid, durable business collecting a reliable toll.
But then we arrive at the third architecture outlined in the article, the AI segment, XAI.
And this segment is positioned as the living embodiment of Damodaran's warning. It's the unpredictable variable in the IPO.
Of the three divisions, it features the lowest gross margins, and those margins actually deteriorated significantly throughout 2025.
Mm.
It requires immensely heavy capital expenditure to secure computing power.
It faces intense, well-funded competition from other global language models, and crucially, it possesses no established moat.
It represents the exact scenario where the cost of capital heavily outweighs the near-term returns.
The massive capital required just to purchase the necessary semiconductor clusters to train these foundational models is staggering. And because there are half a dozen major tech conglomerates doing the exact same thing, pricing power is virtually non-existent.
But hold on, let me push back on this because we need to view this through a historical lens. If you're looking at this from a conventional tech perspective, isn't it standard operating procedure for a new revolutionary business segment to require massive cash absorption initially?
Well, yes, that is the common argument.
If we look back 15 years, Wall Street punished Amazon for burning cash. Yet Amazon's retail business funded AWS for years before AWS became the ultimate high-margin juggernaut.
That's true.
So why are we labeling XAI a dangerous value trap while Amazon's cash burn is universally recognized as a brilliant investment phase? Aren't we just judging this with the benefit of hindsight?
I mean, that defense is the exact narrative utilized by management teams to justify endless cash burn. It forces us to clearly define the boundary between a legitimate investment phase and a permanent value trap.
How do we do that?
We can conceptualize this using an A and B dynamic. You have a mature, highly profitable business, which we'll call A. In this case, that's Starlink and launch.
Yeah.
Business A acts as the cash cow, funding the emerging, highly speculative business, which is B, XAI. You're using the cash flow of the present to build the cash flow of the future.
It's the defining structure of a dual duration compounder. The debate rests entirely on whether business B will eventually succeed.
Yes, but the structure is only mathematically valid if business B eventually matures, reverses the flow of capital, and overflows to generate substantially more cash than it currently consumes.
And value is actively destroyed when that reversal never arrives.
Exactly. Permanent capital absorption is the strict definition of value destruction. The difference between AWS and XAI comes down to the unit economics of what is being built.
because AWS was building tangible infrastructure where the marginal cost of hosting the next customer was near zero and they had a massive head start.
Right. The XAI equation is fraught with entirely different risks. You have maximum reinvestment requirements paired with minimum margins in an environment with intense competition preventing any sort of pricing power.
And perhaps most dangerously, the AI segment is chasing an entirely unproven wave.
Let us examine that narrative risk, because the entire sky-high valuation of the AI segment inherently assumes a specific future.
It assumes that artificial intelligence will eventually replace human labor across vast swaths of the global economy. That scenario opens up an almost unimaginably large addressable market, essentially the entire payroll of the knowledge economy.
If that premise is correct, the eventual cash flow might justify the current astronomical burn rate. But if that fundamental premise is incorrect,
if AI primarily functions as a tool that augments labor rather than completely replacing it,
then the economic reality shifts violently. If AI simply makes a junior analyst 20% more efficient, companies will not replace the analyst. They'll just expect slightly more output.
Meaning the addressable market shrinks dramatically. The wave is a fraction of the size assumed by the market, and the valuation models supporting the XAI segment collapse under their own weight.
Exactly.
This highlights a critical tension for you when analyzing companies in your own portfolio. How do you distinguish between a temporary investment phase and a permanent value trap when the narrative surrounding the technology is so overwhelmingly positive?
It's tough. The headlines in corporate communications are telling you that this is the next industrial revolution, but the spreadsheet is showing a massive, unyielding consumption of capital with deteriorating margins.
So what's the test?
You distinguish the two by brutally interrogating the unit economics and the true cost of acquiring growth. The spreadsheet must eventually balance.
Narratives, no matter how intoxicating, cannot subsidize negative returns indefinitely. Which brings us to a crucial conceptual framework detailed in the article for dissecting any business model, understanding the relationship between the toll and the wave.
Right. The Averaging Up article emphasizes that every business essentially consists of these two elements. The toll is what the business collects today because it sits at a structural choke point.
It's the immediate defensible revenue generated by a product or service. And the wave is the external secular force that is expanding the volume of traffic that will pass through that toll tomorrow.
The critical analytical question you must ask when evaluating any high-growth narrative is simply this: does the wave cost anything?
Right, because in the vast majority of corporations, growth is highly mechanical. It must be purchased dollar by painstaking dollar through constant reinvestment.
Building a new factory to meet rising consumer demand is mechanical growth. Spending billions on server clusters to train an AI model in the hopes of future dominance is highly expensive, highly risky mechanical growth.
The company is forcibly manufacturing its own wave through capital expenditure, which perfectly describes the XAI segment.
It's an attempt to force a technological wave through sheer financial brute force.
But the article contrasts this expensive mechanical growth with the exact opposite end of the spectrum, an architecture it terms the free surfer.
I love this concept. The free surfer represents the absolute pinnacle of corporate value creation. It's a business architecture characterized by a zero-cost wave combined with minimal reinvestment requirements.
The company sits at a structural choke point, the toll, but it does not have to pay a single dollar to increase the traffic passing through that choke point.
The world, through its own natural evolution, delivers the growth completely for free.
The limiting case examples provided in the collection make the mechanics of this incredibly clear. Look at a company like Visa. Visa operates the payment network. They are the toll.
But Visa does not have to spend its own corporate capital to convince the global population to transition from using physical cash to digital payments.
The broader modernization of the global economy does all of that heavy lifting for them. Banks wanting lower handling costs, merchants wanting faster checkouts, consumers wanting convenience.
Or consider S&P Global. They rate corporate and sovereign debt.
And they do not have to pay governments and corporations to issue more debt.
Exactly. The global financial system's natural tendency to increase leverage and issue bonds acts as a free wave, constantly pushing more volume directly through their toll.
Because that external wave is free, and the reinvestment required to process the next marginal credit card transaction or rate the next corporate bond is practically zero, every single unit of growth translates directly into pure value creation.
These companies are completely insulated from the risk of growth destroying value, simply because the return on their invested capital so massively exceeds the cost of that capital.
They're not manufacturing the wave. They are simply riding it. If a mechanical compounder is a person diligently rowing a boat, where every yard of forward progress requires a physical, exhausting expenditure of energy.
A free surfer is a sailboat with its sails already raised.
Right. It simply lets the external wind do the work. The person rowing can certainly make progress and build a highly successful business, but only if their caloric intake, their capital, sustains their output.
If they exhaust themselves fighting a strong current, or if the cost of the calories exceeds the value of the distance traveled, they destroy their own energy reserves.
The sailboat bypasses that equation entirely by harnessing the environment.
If we synthesize all of these concepts, we're looking at an absolute spectrum of value that directly challenges the market's simplistic obsession with pure top-line growth.
It requires us to categorize businesses based on the cost of their momentum.
We can map the spectrum clearly from left to right. On the far left, you have the pure value destroyer.
This is growth, characterized by heavy reinvestment, thin or negative margins, returns firmly below the cost of capital, and an unproven wave.
Based on the financial metrics available in the 2026 data, the XAI segment risks falling directly into this category if the narrative fails to materialize into structural profitability.
Moving toward the center, you find the mechanical compounder. This is your healthy, traditional business model.
It requires real, sustained capital reinvestment, but the management team maintains the strict financial discipline to ensure those returns comfortably clear the cost of capital.
It creates genuine value with every cycle, but it requires continuous, intensive effort. Continuing right, you encounter the capped high return business.
These are specialized capital light operations that generate phenomenal returns on the small amount of capital they do deploy.
But they lack a massive external wave to absorb large amounts of reinvested cash. They create high-quality value, but their ultimate scale is capped by that recycling limitation. They simply cannot deploy enough capital to build an empire.
And finally, occupying the far right of the spectrum sits the free surfer. A free, secular wave, virtually zero reinvestment necessary, resulting in pure, frictionless value creation.
The central problem for investors is that the market routinely misprices this entire spectrum by indiscriminately rewarding anything that is labeled growth.
Analysts look at a top-line revenue increase and applaud, entirely regardless of whether that growth required heroic, margin-crushing effort or arrived completely free of charge.
This is precisely where Aswath Damodaran's methodology becomes so vital. The spreadsheet tests the hope.
A compelling narrative about replacing global human labor with artificial intelligence is intoxicating. But eventually, that narrative must flow into the operating margins and the returns on invested capital.
If it does not, it's merely a story. It's not a durable enterprise.
In a free surfer architecture, growth is an answer. You know exactly what it means and exactly how much value it is creating for the enterprise. Everywhere else on the spectrum, growth is merely a question.
It's a prompt demanding that you rigorously investigate the underlying arithmetic before assuming value is being created. For you, as someone reading financial statements or analyzing your own investments, this fundamentally changes how you should approach an earnings report.
The next time you see a headline celebrating a massive revenue increase or an aggressive expansion plan, your immediate instinct should not be to celebrate.
Your immediate instinct must be to ask, what did that wave cost? And does the return actually clear the hurdle of capital? You have to look past the expanding top line and find the structural integrity underneath.
You must demand evidence of actual value creation, not merely evidence of corporate activity.
Right. A business expanding its operations at negative returns is not executing a grand strategic vision. It is simply bleeding out at an accelerated pace, masked by the illusion of forward momentum.
Well said.
We have taken the corporate spreadsheet, analyzing the SpaceX IPO and Damodaran's rigorous arithmetic, and extracted a very strict test for how value is actually built versus how it is merely simulated.
It's a powerful lens.
It is. But if we pull this out of the financial markets and apply this stringent spreadsheet test to our own professional lives, it forces a deeply uncomfortable question. Think about your own career trajectory. Are you pursuing personal growth? You know, taking on endless new projects, accumulating additional degrees, or constantly expanding your commitments? That actually costs you more in time, energy, and mental capital than it returns?
That is a tough question to answer.
Are you deliberately compounding your personal value, or are you inadvertently destroying it by exhausting yourself chasing an incredibly expensive wave?
This content is educational and reflects a personal analytical framework. It does not constitute investment advice. Visit averagingup.com to explore the full collection.
This content is educational and reflects a personal analytical framework. It does not constitute investment advice. Visit averagingup.com to explore the full collection.